This podcast is generously sponsored by the Pillar Network. The Pillar Network is a community of SBC and International Baptist churches that are doctrinally aligned, missionally driven, and committed to equipping, planting, and revitalizing churches together. If you're a pastor of an established church and you're desiring to lead your congregation to plant churches, but you're not sure how to get started, Pillar could be a great resource for you. Reach out to them today at thepillarnetwork.com. Thepillarnetwork.com.
Baptist 21 is a pastor-led voice for Southern Baptists in the 21st century. The B21 podcast will discuss current issues in the SBC with Southern Baptist church leaders. To check out more resources, visit us at baptist21.com.
Welcome to the Baptist 21 podcast, where we have conversations about what it means to be Baptist in the 21st century. And today that means we're going to have conversations reflecting on the Southern Baptist Convention of 2021 coming out of Nashville, and even just things that have happened in the week since. I had planned to do this with some of the more present SBC leaders, Baptist 21 guys that we did the preview podcast with, but we've all been on either vacation or sabbatical. And so instead I've invited three friends who have done some writing for Baptist 21 to be on here. That's Clint Darst, Nathan Rose, Aaron Minikoff. Clint did some writing for us on baptism. We've had him on the podcast talking about baptism. Nathan Rose about regenerate church membership. And then Aaron Minikoff has written for us about Baptist associating and a new paradigm for Baptist associations. And so I'd recommend checking out all of those. But brothers, thanks for being on the podcast.
Great to be here.
Absolutely.
Well, hey guys, I want to start off just briefly talking about, and I don't have a better term for it, but your SBC pedigree, because in some sense you all come from different backgrounds. You pastor different kind of churches. Clint, you're a church planter. Nathan and Aaron, you guys pastor what would be considered more historic Baptist churches. And so let's just start kind of talking about how you became SBC. Tell a little bit just about your church so people understand you're all kind of coming from different backgrounds. So Aaron, let me start with you. Tell us how you became SBC, and then tell us a little bit about Mount Vernon.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up as a non-Christian. I went to church for the first time at a four-square church in last year of high school and all through college. But I joined a Southern Baptist church when I moved to Washington, D.C., and started attending Capitol Hill Baptist Church the week before Mark Dever was installed there as the senior pastor. So I became SBC in 1994 or 95, and eventually went to Southern Seminary, studied there for a number of years, was a member of Third Avenue Baptist Church, deacon there, an elder there, an interim pastor there, came to Mount Vernon Baptist in 2008, a church founded in 1959. And maybe that's a little too new to be considered historic, but it's definitely a colonial brick building, white steeple, just north of Metro Atlanta, Southern Baptist Church.
How many SBCs have you been to, you think?
Oh, I've been to, I don't know, about 19.
Okay, awesome. That's helpful. Yeah, that's really
quite
helpful.
A few.
Yep. Nathan, tell us about Liberty Baptist in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, so serve as the lead pastor of Liberty Baptist Church. I've been here for 9 years, and the way that I became SBC is my parents did take me to many SBC churches growing up. However, I was not converted until later in life at the age of 22. Yeah, and that's when I really began to study theology and just kind of come to my own personal theological convictions and attended Midwestern. So I would say, in one sense, I was raised Southern Baptist, but in a truer sense, became one, just after further study. And so attended Midwestern back in 2006 to 2009. And the Lord kept me here in Kansas City, which is great. So Liberty Baptist is, we've been around for, I think, 60 years. So not historic, but, you know, definitely not a new church plant. And so we are right in Midwestern's backyard, and it's great to be here and looking forward to talking about all things SBC.
Hey, tell me, same question for you. How many SBCs have you been to?
I think I started going back in 2014. I believe that was my first one.
So about seven. So Aaron's the senior there, because I know Clint's number's even lower than that. So Clint, you're a church planter, King's Cross in Greensboro. How did you become SBC? You even have, we've talked about it on the podcast before, not full Baptist roots and that kind of thing. But yeah, tell us just a little bit about your history with SBC.
Yeah, I didn't grow up in any one particular church. Bounced around a little bit as a kid, visiting here and there, but wasn't raised in the church. And got involved with the college ministry in college called Campus Outreach. And the particular kind of the region I was involved with out of UNC Charlotte was out of a PCA church. Went on staff with them for 7 years and loved them, was very grateful. But with studying with the pastors and having conversations, I just ended up saying, brothers, I love y'all. We agree on almost everything. I just don't see infant baptism nor Presbyterian polity in the scriptures. And so went to Southeastern rather than RTS so that I could begin to meet kind of some Baptists and figure out how I was going to make that transition. Also, at the time, Dave Russell had taken Campus Outreach up to Capitol Hill Baptist Church. And so he had begun to introduce me to some of the non-mark stuff. And so as I read some of that, it was like, yes, this is the stuff I've been wrestling with. This is what I see in the scriptures. And then by God's grace, revitalized a struggling church plant in Lincolnton, North Carolina, Freedom Church, and helped lead them into participation in the SBC, to joining the SBC, and then and went from the lead pastor there to planting King's Cross here in Greensboro, and this, you know, SBC plant here in Greensboro.
And you've been, I think, what, to two or
three? We don't need to talk about that, Nate. You just need to move on.
I need to hear two or three SBCs.
Yeah, two or three.
And I shame you every time you don't go. So
that's why I was not looking forward to that.
But
question.
Also, you.
But I'm in now. I'm in now. I'm in.
I appreciate it.
And this, you went to the last one, right?
I did. I was there. Yep.
We're not gonna have you talk about Nashville if you weren't there. But also, just it'd be helpful. You guys have really sought to be a church that is diverse from the beginning. So getting into some of the most hot topics in the SBC. You mm-hmm. have fellow elders who are minorities and so forth. So just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's regular tension. Now, the Lord has been really kind, and there's a sweet spirit of unity and a great commitment to the scriptures and to our church and a belief in cooperation. And so no challenge with anything SBC on paper, but kind of the culture, the function, the history, some of the debates and tensions is, you know, when some of the nonsense goes viral, because that's what tends to go viral, there's hard conversations in the office. And so that's a normal reality for us, is just seeking how do we honor the Lord and cooperate and it not threaten the unity and health of our local church, which I believe is obviously that's what it means to be Baptist, is to prioritize the autonomy mm-hmm. and health of the local church.
And so, you brought yeah. all of your elders to the SBC this year.
We did, all of our elders, and then kind of our pastoral resident, a couple pastoral assistants, worship leader. Okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's start there then. Let's start with a big question to kind of frame, and then we can go into more specifics. But maybe let's talk about overall impressions, biggest takeaways. You might even just say highlights, lowlights from the SBC. So as you reflect on your time in Nashville, yeah, just give us overall takeaways. Maybe Nathan Rose, start with you, and then I'll jump to the other brothers. And I may share some along the way as well.
Yeah, I would say the biggest takeaway for me, Nate, was that all the hype leading up to the convention was just that. You know, the internet would have you think it was going to be a bloodbath, a brawl, that we were going to, you know, start picking up chairs and throwing it at one mm-hmm. another. And that is certainly not what happened. We had disagreements. Yep. But they were cordial, they were friendly, they were godly, and it was just even a reminder that the internet is not real life, that Twitter is a facade. And so, I mean, I was greatly encouraged, because, you know, I kind of believed that it was going to get really ugly and really nasty, and it didn't. And so I think that's a huge takeaway. I think that speaks to the messengers, to the people involved, that ultimately we want to honor Christ. So that was kind of my big takeaway.
That's good. Aaron, I'll come to you. Highlights, lowlights, big takeaways.
The big takeaway is how remarkable it is to see thousands upon thousands, I think over 16,000 messengers from autonomous Baptist churches doing business together and attempting to live out the unity that Jesus prayed for us in John 17. So that's pretty amazing. I think it's the world's largest deliberative body. That's amazing. To Nathan's point, yeah, I mean, there were, depending on what side one was on, and that's, you know, part of the conversation, but those who lost votes appeared for the most part to be measured and civil. I think a highlight was I've seen over my time attending these meetings participation of folks now my age and younger has increased, and as a result, I think part of that, I've seen more and more people coming to these meetings with a similar heart for ecclesiology. And so seeing these smaller events within this larger meeting, like the Pillar event or a Nine Marks event, or even seminary lunches, which have been going on for a long time, these are almost like small groups, you know, in your church that make this big church seem small. And that was a highlight. Also, I would say from the outside looking in, so reading, I've never seen as many write-ups in secular papers as I saw in this Baptist, in this SBC annual meeting. But from the outside looking in, it appears that we are known as a theologically conservative movement. And I think that's a good thing, because it's important that we be orthodox with a little O, and that we be known as being orthodox. And so in the midst of all this controversy, and it is real controversy, and I don't want to in any way downplay it, and I'm discouraged by a lot of it, but we seem to be known as a theologically conservative movement. And then just real quick, because maybe you want to talk about it later, I think the low light was what I saw as broad support for Vision 2025, which laid out, at least originally, sort of five goals, numeric goals for progress in the SBC. And I don't think that's setting the right tone. And I think that's worth talking about later on, Nate, if you agree.
Yeah, we can jump into that. Mainly we get to the business section of my questions. I think you're right. I think one of the kind of narratives heading in was that the SBC is going liberal. I felt like that was resoundingly defeated. And I think most people saw that as either disingenuous or just completely out of touch. And I think you're hitting on something there. Though, having said that, I think we always have to be on guard. I mean, I just preached Genesis 3 this week. There's always going to be the temptation, as God really said, and there's always going to be a temptation to slide one way or the other. And so we have to be diligent. There are things that happen in our convention of churches that are concerning. But having said that, I think all the narrative and the rhetoric saying that we're going left or going liberal, I think completely misplaced. And I think most of the messengers spoke to that pretty clearly. I got more things to say around that, but yeah.
Yeah, and I just want to just agree with you. Like, to say that from the outside looking in, we're theologically conservative, that's not my attempt to dismiss brothers and sisters within the SBC who are genuinely concerned that there are pockets of us that are imbibing some of the direction of the culture when it comes to various socio-political issues or even theological issues. So I don't mean to downplay that. Those are important. I'm simply saying, for the sake of our testimony, I want to be known as a group of people who really believe the Bible is the Word of God, that Jesus really, literally rose from the dead, and that he's going to return again. And those things are still held on to, and I'm encouraged by that.
Clint, what about you, brother?
Yeah, I feel very similar to what the brothers have said. So just to maybe say something a little different in addition to those things, I was just really encouraged by JD's leadership. So that was one of the highlights for me, because of the very things we're talking about that are important, because Twitter was a dumpster fire burning bright, you know, just before the convention. I thought JD's leadership, I thought he did a great job in a difficult task. So that was one highlight for me. But then similar, I think the biggest highlight for me was, my goodness, we just had 16,000 people in a room in a divisive moment with open mics. And it didn't get nasty, you know. And that was, again, I think some of that's attributed. I think JD did a great job and the other leaders, you know, structuring that. But it could have been a nightmare. And as Nathan was saying, I was afraid it was going to be. And it was like, man, this is really charitable. We're speaking honestly about difficult things, and there's some disagreements, but by and large, it felt like Christians being faithful to do what we're called to do in our cooperation. And so I was that I was really encouraged by. And I think our team processing together, you know, particularly with some of the tensions, we left, and I think we left much more positive than we anticipated leaving. And so that was a huge win for our church.
Well, Clint, let me come right back to you then. One of the guys that I can't remember if Cameron is a elder or a pastoral assistant.
He's a pastoral resident right now.
Yeah, so he had, I guess it was his first SBC. He put something up on Facebook, and I don't remember fully what he said, but basically lots of shirts saying stop CRT, and even just people acting a certain way, seeing people vote against a resolution on racial reconciliation. But he said exactly what you said. By and large, the room seemed to be, you know, very in sync, and then a lot of charity. And so from the brothers in your elder team and others coming out of, what did you feel like the SBC tenor was towards CRT, towards the racial issues that we've been dealing with? Even, I mean, we saw they tried to get Resolution 9 rescinded. That got soundly defeated. But I don't think that means that we're a convention at all that's for CRT. So I'd love to hear kind of how y'all process that.
Yeah, even I will use Cameron as an example. It was great. So we sat at the, I believe it, at the Southeastern luncheon. There was a girl sitting beside him with the anti-CRT thing on her sleeve or shirt or whatever. I can't remember what it was.
Stop CRT. That's what it says.
Stop. Okay, there we go. And but what's great is Cameron was just like, hey, tell me about that. And they had a great conversation. It was real charitable. And like, and Cameron's like, it's interesting. I don't know that there was much, if any, disagreement about it, other than the need to wear it. So I think that felt like the tenor. Again, you know, the scriptures are clear. There's gonna be philosophies, folks are gonna are be tossed to and fro. And I think at some level, it's like, no, like we believe in the sufficiency and the authority and inerrancy of Scripture. And in everything that is out there, as long as it's submitted to the Scriptures, and then the Scriptures win when it's judged right or wrong, good or bad, then we're going to keep moving forward as normal, as Christians throughout church history have, when there are different philosophies that have, you know, controversy, create controversy. So, I think we left similar, like, huh. In some ways, it was less of the dominant public conversation than we anticipated. In other ways, it was clear, like, hey, some people want it to be the dominant conversation. But it felt like, yeah, again, there's real problematic issues with this. And Christians have to be real clear and okay to say that because it contradicts the Scriptures. And so we got to be okay with saying that. And yet we don't need to act fearful like there's a boogeyman that the church is not prepared for and is going to get destroyed. Christ has promised the church wins in the end. And if we submit to the Scriptures and love one another and debate and have good conversation and share concerns, that we'll move forward just fine. And that's kind of, yeah, that felt, generally the tenor of the convention.
Aaron and Nathan, I want to hear your thoughts on that as well, but it's interesting. I was talking to a pastor on the phone a week ago or so, who's very anti-CRT, has put that up on social media before, but also has a church that's pretty diverse. And so he's wrestled through all these things. So he actually sent some of his minority elders to attend the founder's breakfast. And his takeaway afterwards was, they're basically acting like this is the apocalypse. And if you affirm, you know, anything that's close to CRT, like, you've compromised the gospel, we can't overcome this. And he said, I'm not there. Like, I think there's issues with CRT, but I don't think this is the last great thing that's going to be an attack on Christianity. And so he just said, you know, the rhetoric of some, which I think was reflected on the floor, right? There was a loud, vocal minority on many things, particularly on some of the stuff you've addressed. And so I think that's an interesting look at this. Or right now, are we being divided by extreme voices on the fringes of both sides, not just one side? And is there a much more less vocal majority in the middle? I'd be curious what y'all's thoughts are. But Aaron and Nathan, thoughts on CRT in particular, thoughts on kind of conversations around race at the convention? Aaron, maybe you go first.
Yeah, I've got members of the church that I pastor who, you know, send their kids to public school or private school, and they're wrestling on a daily basis with administrations that really have imbibed critical race theory and are applying it just across the board in ways that are making it very difficult for them to parent, their little kids. And so I have a real appreciation for Christians, saying this is an issue and this is a concern and we need to be on guard. At the same time, it's very difficult to have nuanced conversations among 16,000 messengers. And I thought that James Merritt, who was the chair of the resolutions committee, and I may have it wrong, but he seems to kind of represent kind of the old guard in my mind. I mean, I think he has been a face at these meetings as long as I've been going to them. And so for him to stand up and say, look, we are trying to thread a needle here. We recognize that there are messengers who don't want to simply throw CRT under the bus because they believe that it provides them some answers to some of our racial problems that we're experiencing as a country today. And so what we're trying to do is get to the substance of it and let other conversations deal with the labels. I hope I'm summarizing what he said accurately, but I understand why he did that, and I think that was probably the right decision to make. I am concerned that, you know, I don't want us to be a network of churches, a convention of churches that is more concerned, if you will, about CRT than we are concerned about racism. And I know even that statement there is a cliche already, but pastoring in Georgia with a long history and both in the Civil War and in Jim Crow, I'm not calling necessarily brothers and sisters to repent about what happened in the past, but I don't want to dismiss this conversation about race. And I think the anti-CRT movement has a tendency to dismiss the conversation about race. And so I'd like to have my cake and eat it too. I'd like to have careful conversations about CRT and even how it can creep into a church, while at the same time, I have careful, nuanced conversations about attitudes towards race and how those affect our churches today. That's a difficult task, but I think it's an important one.
It's good.
Amen.
Nathan, things you would add there?
You should have let me go first, because Aaron did a brilliant job of summarizing it. The only thing that I would sort of add to was, you know, I remember in 2019 when Resolution 9 came out, and you know, people were so concerned. And I remember having conversations with individuals, even in my church, expressing great concern that, you know, there is a liberal drift, that we are buying, the SBC is buying into CRT, hook, line, and sinker. And I said, you know, I think just give us some time. I would say 98% of the people that voted on Resolution 9 didn't even know what CRT was in that moment. And I said, I think if you give us time, you allow us the ability to process, to think, to examine scriptures, we're going to come out and we'll be just fine. And when we were at this last meeting, 2021, I heard CRT publicly denounced more times than I'm able to count. I mean, it was the one thing that was said again and again. It was the repeated refrain that CRT is antithetical to the gospel. It conflicts with the Christian worldview. No one believes it. No one's teaching it. I mean, again, are there pockets of people that have been influenced? Yes, certainly, just like Aaron said. But that is not the trajectory of the Southern Baptist Convention at all. And so I think with that said, just like Aaron, I think there's other things that we need to focus on. We don't necessarily need to put this aside and say it's not an issue at all, but I'd say by and large, it's not an issue in the SBC. It could be, and we want to be careful, but there's other things that we want to focus on.
It's not a conversation that is good for a soundbite, because when some brothers and sisters hear one denounce CRT, what they are hearing is a denial of either systemic racism, or if we don't want to use that term, a denial of sort of a perpetual problem of racism that still needs to be addressed today. And so I want to be aware of that. I know that's what they're thinking, and I do want to learn. I want to know better why they're thinking that. But at the same time, you know, as we dig into it, we can't simply imbibe CRT.
I don't know. I mean, I think I just typed this out on a note on my phone right after the SBC. I was thinking through reflections myself. I felt like exactly what you said, Nathan. I felt like there was a clear kind of, we're not for CRT. Even JD said at some point, he's went out of his way from the chair to say, I'm no fan of CRT. The president's different ones, my dad, Adam Greenway, and others spoke to this, Mueller, and there were cheers from the floor. At the same time, and I love this, I wrote it down because Herschel York put out a tweet that just said this: we don't like CRT, but we also don't like being told that caring deeply about racial reconciliation is CRT. And I would even add to that what Aaron just said, being told that anytime you think there might be systemic injustice in the world, that you are CRT. And so I think we were clear on that, which leads to another takeaway from me, which was some of the tactics, and it gets back to some of what I said a minute ago, but some of the tactics of pushing this narrative, I think were also rejected by the SBC at large. Again, yeah. The majority of motions brought by certain groups to kind of come after Resolution 9 or to speak to other things, to add CRT to Resolution 2, were soundly defeated from the floor. And so I think Herschel's like little tweet, Dr. York's little tweet there is really helpful in thinking through. We're against on one hand, and on the other hand, we're against being told everything that has any concern about racial issues and concerns is CRT. So I think you've hit on that. Anything else y'all want to say in that, particularly on that issue, before we move on to some of the more specific business?
Well, I think just to clarify earlier that's what I was getting at, that how the convention landed was, yes, again, CRT, we get the problems, but we're going to keep fighting racism. Like, let's move on and not make this the dominant convo. And so, yeah, again, there were still issues and discouragements here and there. But that's that I felt by and large, like, all right, there's more unity around the problem this is. I'm still concerned about yet. Okay, but are we all comfortable fighting against racism? And what does that look like to do that again as a Christian with the gospel and with love moving forward? So yeah.
All right, and Nate, can I just add that Nate, you've done a good job, I think, over the past few weeks or months of talking about how it's possible for Christians to be divided over politics, to say something really obvious. But I think you pointed it out in a helpful way. Like, you know, a decade ago, we would have thought the convention might divide over soteriology, over Calvinism and Arminianism. And Baptists got together and they looked at the scriptures and they said, I think we can live together with these disagreements for these reasons. Mm-hmm. And again, Nate, you pointed out well how it seems to be that politics is the thing that really is dividing us. And at least it's interesting to me because, you know, a lot of the work I did when I was studying was looking at the way Baptists disagreed about politics in the 19th century. And you can just take issue after issue after issue of these relatively early American Baptists during the Second Great Awakening and see how, whether it was the issue of like, how do we address poverty? Or what should our attitude to the Mexican War be, or the War of 1812? What do we do when the federal government decides they're going to deliver mail on Sunday? I mean, it seems maybe silly for us to be thinking about that today, but Christians, we're Baptists, we're really disagreeing about how to address that. And of course, sadly, to a lesser degree, even disagreeing over the issue of slavery to our shame. And so we shouldn't be surprised when we disagree over political matters. That's nothing new in American Baptist history.
Yeah, a lot of concern there. And I think part of my biggest concern coming out of that is, can we live with the tension of, hey, you and I just disagree on this, and it's okay. It doesn't make me a compromiser of the gospel. It doesn't make you a liberal. Because one of the things that really bothered me with the CRT conversation is that it feels like everybody's co-opting the gospel. Everybody's co-opting sufficiency of scripture. So it's like, if you don't see systemic injustice, see, you don't care about love neighbor as self. And then on the other hand, it's like, if you do think there's systemic injustice, then you deny the sufficiency of the Bible. And what I want to say is, it feels like the Bible is absolutely clear on the issue like of racism, for instance. It's very clear. It's not clear on what's best for Black flourishing in America. And so we have to figure out biblical principles to help us think through that. And so we shouldn't just castigate the ones who disagree with us based upon how we land on what should look, you know, as best far as love of neighbor in a culture like ours. And so those who are then saying, I'm the defender of the faith because I hold to this position, I just want to say, guys, can we just chill out a little bit and show each other a little bit of charity? Well, let's talk then from to more specific business. So let's start maybe with motions, high level business, things that stood out and why. I mean, from my end, obviously, the EC business financial plan getting basically struck down was significant. I think that is another big takeaway. Baptists are never going to be okay with somebody getting more of power, you know, hierarchy power. And so that getting struck down, I think for good reason, was a takeaway. Certainly the formation of the sexual abuse response task force. So I'd love to hear any thoughts you guys have there. Any other motions? We've already mentioned this enough. Didn't rescind Resolution 9. So what stood out to you guys and why? Aaron, maybe I'll come back to you and start with you.
Well, if I had not listened to your Baptist 21 podcast prep for this meeting, I would have been lost. I mean, there are clearly sort of what seems to me like internal disagreements over how this convention should operate, and that came quite literally to the floor. And so I'm really grateful for that preparation that you gave me. I felt like I was able to go in more informed, and I definitely want our governance of the annual meeting to be in keeping with our polity as Baptists. And so it seemed like those motions which sought to sort of decentralize power, they seemed appropriate. As far as this sexual abuse in the task force, I just want to say Troy Bush is a pastor of Rehoboth Baptist in Tucker, Georgia. He's a good friend of mine, a wise brother. That congregation had a staff member who committed sexual abuse a number of years ago before Troy pastored that congregation. Mm-hmm. And I think he walked that church really well through the process of both identifying the wrongs that had been happened and thinking through careful ways to address it and contact families and contact other churches. So my point is that Troy stood up at one point in the convention and supported this task force. And because I knew him and I know of his wisdom and have seen his track record of handling it, you know, at some point you just have to follow. And in one sense, I was following Troy because I know him. But not all the messengers, you know him the way I did. But I was pleased that 16,000 messengers took a strong stance to do what we can in keeping with our Baptist polity, because we're not like the Catholic Church, right, with a hierarchical structure that's simply able to pick up a pastor and move him. We're not even Methodists, and it is difficult. And that's a nuance that those who are not familiar with our polity just don't understand.
No.
So I thought it was navigated well, and I'm really thankful to God for that.
People in our own camp, Aaron, I don't think understand that and have difficulty navigating that as well.
Nathan, thoughts for you for business, particularly motions, any that stood out and why?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit on the big ones. I think it was great that we didn't approve the business and financial plan of the executive committee. I don't necessarily think that they had, you know, like false motives. I think they were trying to correct a problem, but this is the beauty of our polity, is the messenger saw that and said, no, we don't like the way that looks. We don't want people to withhold RCP dollars, and we want to be the ones to have that authority. And so I think just our structure functioned the way that it intended. I mean, there were other things. I think one, this is a kind of a small one that I think a lot of people don't notice, was I think there was a motion to extend the amount of time that we have in terms of reading resolutions and processing them. And I think that's one that kind of goes under the radar, but it's so important, because these are public statements that we are making as a convention, and to give us, you know, very little time to read it, to think about it, to process it, to discuss it, to compare it to scripture, I think is really just a disservice to us. I get why they do it. But, you know, with technology and the internet, I think we can, hopefully that will get, changed, so we have a little bit more time to process and to think about resolutions.
Yeah, that's a good thought. Again, talking to my brother last week, you just said it, because of the way we're structured on a lot of these things, nuance is almost always lost. And actually, if you try to come up with a nuanced argument from the microphone, it typically is not received well by the convention. And so I think getting those resolutions in the hands of the messengers ahead of time, with a couple of days at least, you know, maybe Friday of the week before, just a couple of days to process before you come in, I do think would be helpful. We'll talk more about resolutions in a second. But
I was just going to say, it's a long day. Like, no one wants to go home at 10 p.m. and read resolutions. I mean, I like them, but not at that time of, you know.
I mean, on Tuesday afternoon, I was so tired after that Tuesday afternoon session. It was hot. There was a lot of, there's a long sermon, a lot going on. And I jokingly have told people, like, I would have voted to become egalitarian at the end of that. Just like, can we end the session? Can we just end the session? I'm kidding about that, by the way. I've been very clear.
Please cut that out of the podcast.
I've been very clear on my thoughts on complementarianism. But I was just like, man, this is a lot. And so if you have time to process it ahead of time, I do think it would be helpful. Clint, business stuff that stood out for you?
Yeah, I think even what we're talking about right now, kind of the way the, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the numbers, and I'm still learning how all this works. So highlighting Nate's throwing me under the bus for only being to a couple of these, few of these. But, you know, how the thing went on the resolution on abortion, you know, so that one felt like, man, we need nuance. We need conversation. We need to understand the implications of this. The convention is clear, and what we've stated, and I guess that wasn't a resolution, right? That was a resolution.
Yeah.
That was a resolution. Okay, yeah. So, you know, we've been clear on, you know, pro-life womb to tomb. And so what is this saying that we haven't said, or what is this going to do? What are the implications? And so there was lots written about that immediately and kind of in the middle of it. And so, again, I think it highlights, like, man, was I supposed to read and study all that the night before at 10 o'clock? So I think you just saw some of that. How do we help that when we're making such a massive statement that in one part, in principle, we're all in agreement on? But man, this is going to have implications on strategies to protect life in the womb and to make these statements. And if we understood all the implications of those strategies, would we actually say this is the right statement to make? You know.
Yeah, and the truth is on that one, it was not brought out by the committee, and so it was voted to be brought out of committee. So we would have been, in some sense, playing catch up no matter what with that one.
I'm still learning.
Yeah, but yep. I mean, I think that's an important piece because we had to basically discuss that from the floor, and there was a lot of, I'd love to hear others' thoughts, at least to some degree, good-natured disagreement.
Certainly.
Yep.
But real disagreement. And some of it was more about not the ends, but the means to get to the end. And so let's talk about that. We'll peel back to Vision 2025 in a minute, Aaron, but let's talk anything, other resolutions, or particularly the one to abolish or abortion.
Well, I think that in my memory of SBC meetings, I don't recall there being so many resolutions that lacked a kind of nuance, so that didn't seem quite as careful as I'm used to, and it may be the topics, but you know, if someone committed sexual abuse prior to becoming a Christian but was in a position of authority, is he disqualified from being a pastor? And you know, that the resolution about sexual abuse, you know, didn't address that. And so I think there's a couple really strange things going on here. I think number one, we're accustomed to resolutions that are basically so generic that everyone's going to agree. And that's what I'm used to over basically two decades of resolutions. Yeah. That doesn't mean they're bad. It just means they're not intended to be controversial among Baptist Christians. So that's one thing. And I think that was a little bit different here in a couple of places. Number two, we're living in a day and age where 17,000 messengers feel like they have the power to amend and adopt. And we can even do a podcast where we can pick apart sort of every minute of an annual meeting. And that's a great thing. But this is sort of unheard of in history to be able to do this. And I certainly, as a leader, if I had, you know, members of my church, you know, picking apart our members' meetings, you know, what was he thinking when he said that, you know, at 4:45 on Sunday afternoon? It's something we can do. And I think leaders in the future are going to be thinking about as they're crafting resolutions, recognizing that the days of simply bringing something last minute and expecting the trust of the messengers, those days are gone. And there's good to that. And there's some bad to that as well.
That's good. And you know, Dr. Moeller pointed out at the Baptist 21 lunch, and I had never thought about it this clearly. Dr. Moeller has a good way of bringing a lot of clarity to things, but basically said, for it to be a resolution, it really needs to be like overwhelmingly supported by the messengers of the SBC, because if not, we're not necessarily resolved in whatever it is we're saying. Right. And I thought that was an interesting thing to think through, which is probably why in the past, most of the resolutions have been, hey, we overwhelmingly would just say, yes, we're for this. Now, as we try to tackle more nuanced things, it's going to make it much harder for us to be overwhelmingly resolved, though to some degree, it felt like most of the resolution still played out in that way. Nathan Rose, anything you would add on the resolutions in particular?
No, I feel like you guys pretty much covered it. I just, it's I wonder if they even make a percentage, like with in light of what Dr. Mueller said, right? Rather than just a simple majority, like it needs to be 75% or, you know, 66% or something like that.
Yeah. Interesting. On the abolition of abortion, I did find it interesting, again, in the good-natured disagreement, which I think everybody that would even spoke against it would have been for the abolition and absolute abolition of abortion. I think SBC has been clear on that.
Right.
But one person did point out that that resolution, if it hadn't been amended, would have rejected even the methods of like Wilberforce in abolishing slavery in England. And so there's a reason why that's nuanced. But then you come out and then you have public papers that might say certain things and take it a certain way. And so I think it is interesting if we're going to keep doing resolutions. I think, Aaron, your thoughts on this probably needs to have a lot more runway, and this is going to be very interesting moving forward if there isn't trust, I think is well taken. One other thing of note that just stood out to me, particularly kind of going back to the CRT narrative, is that one of the resolutions that had 1,300 signatures, and Dr. Merritt brought this up, had 1,300 signatures that they did not bring out of committee. One of the reasons they didn't is because 60% of those signatures came from five churches. And so it was overwhelmingly five churches pushing that. And then the other thing I found out, which is crazy, if you go back and look at it, there were 1,300 submitted resolutions. 3/4 of those 1,300 came out of 10 churches. And so that is astonishing to think about, that there is a vocal minority that is pushing certain things in the SBC. Just something to be aware of on resolutions moving forward. Thank you for listening to the Baptist 21 podcast. To learn more about us, visit us at our website, baptist21.com. Also, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast with others. It would really help us out. If you ever have thoughts or ideas for future interviews, please reach out to us at our email, baptist21@gmail.com. Again, thanks for listening to the podcast.